This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to Jax
and Dean
on our podcast.
This is our podcast.
It is our. I've just said that, Dean.
This is our podcast.
Oh, it's still our podcast now. That's cute.
Cute.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Play the podcast, please.
You are with Jack and Dean with Tristan in the back for the Tuesday drive home, and it's time for
Joy War.
Jack and Dean. Joy War.
Now, in the past weeks, we've been talking about surrogacy and the rules around surrogacy in Australia and overseas.
Covered it all, didn't
covered it all. Well, speaking of covering it all, we're going to talk about a bit of a sticky topic today.
Oh, goodness me.
You know where I'm going with this one?
I do.
Sperm donation.
Hooray!
Hooray! Joining us live in the studio is Stefan from KHQ Lawyers. Hey, Stefan, how are you doing?
Thank you for having me. Good, thanks.
I bet you find they use a cup.
They use a cup for what?
Oh, all right.
Okay.
So, it's not a comedy festival yet, Jacqueline. So we're talking about sperm donation.
Yes.
So is a donor a parent?
So the question of whether the donor is a parent can be complicated. As a general rule, the answer is no. There are two types of donors. There's known donors and there's unknown donors. The Family Law Act, with reference to the various estates acts, which essentially mirror one another, provide that the sperm donated to a woman would not constitute a father relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of gender, the woman's partner would be listed as the other parent on the birth certificate. And if you're not a parent, you don't have parental responsibility for the child, and you're also not financially responsible for that child.
Okay.
I'm still stuck on the, do you donate in a cup or do you donate in something else? You wouldn't put it in an envelope.
I don't think
so, Dean.
I think
no.
It might strain through.
It might do that.
That's how you make labna.
Like what? Labna.
You are not picking up what I'm putting down.
Oh, no.
Or donating.
This is it. So what if the donor, though, wants to be part of the child's life? Can they do that?
So that's a matter that we would recommend that you do get advice on. It can lead to all sorts of issues. So as a general rule, say, for example, you have a lesbian couple.
Mm-hmm.
They're living together in a domestic relationship and they decided they wanted the donor to be part of the child's life.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to be really clear about what you want to achieve by that, whether you want that child to have a relationship with that person, whether that role is in the form of a distant relative, whether they're even known to the child. So it can lead to issues. If there is a relationship there, it's likely, and what we see most commonly is people making an application to the family court to spend time. So you really do need to think long and hard before conception about what it is that you're hoping to achieve. If it's not a known donor, or if it's a donor that you know but you don't want to have the relationship, that needs to be very clearly documented in what's called a donor agreement.
Because, yeah, you wouldn't want to wait till after the child was born to then find out that they either, A, wanted to be actively part of the life, of the child's life, or B, you didn't want to have any bar of it. I mean, that'd be awful.
That's right. Yeah. And oftentimes people, what they intend might change very dramatically. When you're holding a baby in your arms, it's a very different story. So we are working in hypotheticals, yes, a little bit, but it's why you want to have that conversation early and to all be on the same page.
Oh, definitely.
So what are some of the things you might want to consider if in making this donor agreement?
So if you were sitting down to talk to your friends or your family about the possibilities, some of the things you might like to consider. So firstly, and probably most importantly, is whether you want to have a relationship with this child, whether you want the child to be informed of your identity, whether you want to receive information about the child's life, things like school, things like medical emergencies. And also there's a range of possibilities. What if the intended parents actually break up themselves? So what if the child moves into state or overseas? These are all things that the court would expect that you have considered beforehand to take out the shock.
So I'm really interested. So if a donor, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, so if a donor decides they want to withhold their identity, does the child have rights later on to find out?
Good question.
It's a really great question. Look, the law's changing in this area. It's complex. There's a lot of literature at the moment about the right for children to know who they are. There's a huge list of reasons why that should be the case as well. Things like genetics, knowing if you're prone to family disease. So it's a complicated area right now. It would depend largely on the jurisdiction. It might be an overseas donor. That's just very common. So it really would be a case-by-case basis, but it's something that should be talked about a bit more frequently.
But let's say you did enter into this donor agreement. Is it binding? Or could it be challenged at a later date?
So donor agreements are not actually binding. So we do recommend that you get a lawyer to draft them. We recommend that you get independent legal advice. The reason why they're so important is not because they're binding, but because it goes to the intention of the parties at that really critical point. At the time of conception, what was the intention of the party? There's no better way to show the court what the intention was than to have a drafted formal agreement. And then you take it all out the he said or she said. It just promotes a bit of clarity.
Get it in writing.
You have been listening.
Yeah. That's what I've learned from all these episodes.
Get it in writing.
Okay. Yeah, no, it can save you a lot of stress. Of course, not every donor agreement is going to capture all of the situations that are likely to arise, but they can go a long way. Look, one of the other things as well that clients have done in the past is, if they're in a position to do so, is to sit down with a counsellor or a psychologist, and there are some fantastic counsellors that work in this space, to really kind of flesh out the details, talk about what the expectations are, and to also challenge that logic. So that can be a very helpful process as well.
And I imagine there are some people listening who might think, you know, that they're, you know, sensible people. They could perhaps sit down and write the agreement themselves. But I guess sometimes having that independent third party is very helpful to challenge or to suggest things you might not have thought of.
Absolutely. So oftentimes clients, when they leave a consultation with the lawyer that's experienced in this field, they're saying, well, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah.
There are things that just because of practice, just because of if you've been around and you've done it long enough, you've seen things that may not have ever been considered an option back, you know, when it first started talking about that. Things like what if the intended parties separate? If they've relocated, what do you do in that situation? You know that there's this child that you're genetically connected to. Did you have a say about that? Did you ever think about those things? And if that changes your perspective, then you ought to think about that very carefully now.
Yeah, with Jack and Dean for the Tuesday Drive Home. We're having a chat to Stefan from KHQ Lawyers. We're talking about sperm donation. Now, Stefan, what are some of the considerations that a donor needs to think about before they get their donation ready?
So, as we were talking about earlier, there are a range of considerations that you'd want to go through, largely centering around whether or not the donor has a relationship with the child. Often what we actually see in real life is that even after these agreements are made, people deviate from those agreements just a little bit. So, I mean, really the strength of a donor agreement depends largely on whether the parties abide by the terms of the agreement. So you don't want to do anything that would undermine that agreement, that would take away. What you're really trying to do is make sure that if you do end up in court and a judge is saying to you, what was the intention, you can rely on that document and say, well, this is exactly what we plan to do, mm-hmm. And this is how we've done it. You begin to chip away at it if you deviate. So our advice is always to stick to the plan.
But how far ahead should you be thinking? Should you be thinking about the child's life until they're five, for example? Or should you be starting to think about whether you want to be involved in choosing their school or choosing, you know...
Yeah, of course. So a lot of the major long-term decisions are really encapsulated within the concept of parental responsibility. So the parents, so again, if we were to use the example of a lesbian couple with a sperm donor, the mums would be the parents, the legal parents, which affords them the parental responsibility. Parental responsibility means that you are the people who are responsible for making decisions about long-term issues, religion, medical issues, education. What you could do if you wanted to, if there was situation where you wanted to raise a child as three people, you could always... So the law doesn't totally cover all the situations we see. It doesn't cater for all the types of rainbow families, unfortunately. What you could do is you could enter into consent orders that awards the three parties parental responsibility. Now, consent orders, the process for consent orders is entirely administrative now. You don't need to front up to a judge. You don't need to pay barristers to do that. So it's a fairly simple process. But if you don't do that, if you're the donor and you don't do that, you are vulnerable. You're at risk because you don't have the ability to make those decisions. You don't have that parental responsibility.
It does take a village to raise a child, though.
So absolutely.
The more the merrier, I think.
Absolutely.
Pass them around.
I think the thing is, get it in writing. Get your intentions clear. Get it in writing, so keep yourself protected. Thank you very much, Stefan. We look forward to speaking to you and the team from KHQ Lawyers again next week.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.